Ah, is that the sound of somebody being parachuted into the Worldlink studio?
I think it might be.
I think it might actually be the sound of Andy Valvert landing in Afghanistan. As promised, it is with great pleasure that we welcome back to the Worldlink studio comedian and sometime DW journalist, Andy Valvert.
Thank you. It's nice to be back here in one piece.
Now, Andy, you're fresh back from Camp Bastion, the massive military base in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. What were you doing there? Why Camp Bastion?
Well, I was invited by the Estonian Ministry of Defense to come and perform for the troops. So I...
This is with your comedian hat on, presumably.
My comedian half of my life, yes. And so since I also perform in Estonian, they wanted to bring some entertainment to the troops there. There's about 150 troops stationed in Afghanistan that are Estonian, part of the ISAF force.
So this is 150 troops out of how many at Camp Bastion? It's a big, big base, isn't it?
It's a big base. The total population, I understand, is 28,000.
Wow.
And it's 2 miles wide and 4 miles long.
And just remind us why you speak Estonian.
Because my parents are Estonian and they made me learn Estonian. And I thought, why do I need this language? It's a dead language. But apparently it comes in handy now.
In Afghanistan.
Well, in Afghanistan. And I also tour in Estonia. So, yes, it's quite handy. Although I speak an older Estonian.
So did they understand, these troops, then?
They do. They, as you know, language sort of evolves over time. And my parents left during the war. And so my language is the Estonian that is spoken sort of pre-World War II. And it's really great when I go to Estonia because all the old women love me. They go, God, you're Estonian. It's just lovely.
And is your comedy different in Estonian and English?
Well, I tend to be a political comedian, so I work sort of with wide topics that everyone understands. Although I do a lot of observational stuff about Estonia as well. The more I go to Estonia, the more I pick up sort of local things that I can find my own angle on. And, you know, humor is international. My humor tends to be international. So I'm always writing new material because I tend to be a topical comedian.
Ooh, but could that land you in trouble? Entertaining the troops, was there sort of sensitive issues, things that you were warned about in advance with political comedy?
They said two things you cannot talk about, Islam and God. And I thought, that's fine, because I don't really do a whole lot of religious stuff in my set anyway. So it was quite all right. There was a few other things that I had some solutions for Afghanistan, which I normally do in my thing. And I thought, well, no, these guys are actually working on a solution. They don't really need to hear from me. But I was there right around the time when the British royals had their new son. So I did manage to get one in there. I said, you can tell he's definitely British because he has no teeth.
So. I thought we were supposed to have really big horse-like teeth.
No. Yes. There seems to be this fear of going to the dentist in England. But
this joke went down well with the Estonians.
I ran it by the Brits first, because the first night I performed strictly an Estonian, 230 or 40 Estonian troops. And then the Danes heard that we were in town. The Danish have a camp there as well. And so they said, hey, if you guys are not doing anything, why don't you come do a show for us? So the next night we went and we performed for the Danish crew. And then, of course, we also traveled. There was three comedians, myself and two other comedians from Estonia, as well as the seven rock cheerleaders from Tartu, which is the university town in Estonia.
I bet they were popular.
So, well, they were more popular than we were.
Is it just a political correctness check? No female comedians on the lineup by the sounds of it?
There were no female comedians because, you see, in Estonia, comedy is such a new art form.
But hang on. If this is a new art form, how does the Estonian military come to think, oh, I know what we'll do. We'll invite Andy Valvert over to entertain the troops. How does that come about?
Well, there is a company in Estonia called Comedy Estonia, and it's run by Louis Zazarin, who is an Australian. And Louis said, sure. And he goes, we'll take Stuart and myself, and then we'll get Andy Valver, who's the Estonian, and we'll all go. So
you get an email saying you've been invited to entertain the troops in Afghanistan.
Yes. And exactly.
How did you react to that?
Well, you know, it's, you know, a lot of gigs, they'll say, well, we'd love you to perform. Is there anything special that you need? Would you like some soda water in your dressing room? Would you this? But in this
the
case,
rider.
Right, the rider. Well, in this case, they just asked one question. What's your blood type?
And I did thought, that not worry you?
And I thought, blood type? Why? And they said, just in case we need to put some back in. And I thought, what?
But apart from the blood type worry, did you have any other worries politically about going to entertain the
politically,
troops?
I wasn't worried about. Whatever I feel about the involvement of the West in Afghanistan and all of that doesn't come into play, because the reality is that there are thousands and thousands of young people, and they are young. They're all 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. The officers tend to be a bit older. And they're there whether they want to be or not. And it's a very dull existence. And it's thankless. It is hot. It was 50 degrees the first day that I was there. For those of you who don't understand Celsius, it was 122 degrees Fahrenheit.
It was hot.
It was hot. And it is dusty. And there is no alcohol. And there is entertainment. They have things. I mean, the food is great. But they're there. And they're there for 6 months, sometimes a year. So if I can go provide a little laughter for one night and change the routine just a little bit, I'm happy to go.
Were you nervous? Because you must have had a sort of a period of several weeks in which you were preparing to go and thinking about going and telling people that you were going and listening to their reactions and perhaps saying goodbye just in case.
I think my girlfriend Maggie was more scared, more nervous than I was. My mother was definitely. She goes, do you really have to go? Yes, I do have to go, Mom. I was not nervous so much. I knew there was one part that was going to be a little bit dicey, and that would be flying into Camp Bastion and then flying out of Camp Bastion, because you are flying into a war zone, and it is a war zone. I remember on approach, we flew from Brize Norton, the Royal Air Force Base in Oxfordshire, which is lovely, by the way. And so we flew from there to Akrotiri, which is in Cyprus. And then from Cyprus, we flew into Afghanistan. And 30 minutes outside of Afghanistan, they say, body armor and helmets on. Nobody tells you anything.
And this includes you. This isn't just the soldiers.
Not at all. Exactly. In fact, when I was walking toward the terminal to get on the plane, the Estonian attaché, Karmo, looked at me and he goes, oh, by the way, you need this. And I said, what? And he's holding body armor and a helmet. I said, no, I'm good. He goes, no, you have to wear it. So now we're flying into Afghanistan, 30 minutes out. We've got our body armor and our helmets on. And then suddenly they plunge the cabin into darkness. And it's quiet. And you could hear a pin drop.
They didn't say this is a normal procedure for flying in the hours of darkness.
Or... No. They don't see. The thing is, the military... They don't tell me, when are we leaving? Can't tell you that. Where are we going? Can't tell you that. When I fly to a gig, it's usually first class or business class. Here, it was none of your business class.
When you're talking about being plunged into darkness, we're not just talking about the cabin being plunged into darkness. We're talking about a plane which is landing without lights.
Absolutely.
In order that it can't be seen and can't be shot at.
Absolutely. Cool. So you are completely dark. All the window shades are down. There's just a sort of a light, faint green on the floor that shows you where the aisles are. But other than that, it's completely dark. And those 30 minutes, you really have some time to think. And it's amazing what goes through your head in there. I mean, I'm sure this is
We're perfectly- curious, Andy. What went through your head?
You know, I'm thinking things, sort of serious questions like, did I have a good life? Should I have done more? Can the guy next to me smell that I soiled myself? And soldiers are macho. You know, they don't say a word, but I'm not a soldier.
Did you verbalize?
Did I verbalize? No, I stayed quiet. I just sat there. And then they brought us into the terminal. I said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Afghanistan, Camp Bastion. The first thing we're going to do is play you the incoming fire alarm. So the siren just goes, should that happen, please seek cover. I'm going, oh, man. So you don't expect any of this. You think, well, it's a gig, but it's not.
So Camp Bastion, we've arrived. What's it like? What sort of scenes greeted you when you got there?
We had slept in till about 9, and you walk out in the morning and the heat hits you just in the face because you've been in this cool air-conditioned tent. and then the heat hits you, and it's bright sunshine, and you can't see, and you're just acclimating, and you know, it's hot. By 9 o'clock in the morning, it's already 36, 37, 39 degrees. Hmm. And so that first day, it went up to 50 degrees.
Wow. And you're allowed to just wander around?
Or? You can wander around as much as you want. You cannot leave Camp Bastion. Of course, Camp Bastion is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So maybe you wouldn't want to.
There's really, no, and you don't want to go beyond the wire, as they call it. It's really not recommended.
What about the people you met? What kind of conversations were you having? Tell us about some of the encounters.
You know, a large topic of conversation is when they get to go home. Hmm. It's sort of like, what am I going to do when I get home? And they say, you know, what's going on out there? Although they have got access to all the news, and Sky TV is all on the, or the BBC or whatever. You can go into the Brits.
We'd like to think they were all watching Deutsche Welle. But
exactly. I don't know if the Deutsche had Deutsche Welle. See, the Germans are up in Mazar-i-Sharif, so I'm sure Deutsche Welle is on up there. The Estonians had their own sauna, which was kind of fun.
A sauna in the middle of Afghanistan where it's 50 degrees. Yeah.
The Estonians do not travel without their sauna. It's cultural. And I'll tell you something. When it's 45 degrees at night outside and you go into a sauna that's 95 degrees, then you come out, things are rather cool. And it's wonderfully therapeutic. It's really good for you.
But the trend hasn't caught on amongst the other camps.
No, but I'll tell you, there are those who come to the Estonian camp and go, we got room for one more, and it's sort of spreading little by little.
And do they have their own food as well, each camp? So the Estonians eat Estonian food?
There are two dining facilities. One is on the British side and one is on the American side. The American side has their own cafeteria, canteen, whatever it's called, and the Brits have their own. They drink so much water there. I was personally going through 4 to 5 liters of water a day.
Wow. And it's thirsty work doing comedy. What was your show like, Andy?
You know, the shows were really great. They were very welcoming. They were great crowds. They were really accepting. They had a great time. They really loved having us there.
So where are you performing? Set the scene for me a bit.
We were staying with the engineers, the men and women who take care of the armored personnel carriers and all of the sort of mechanized stuff that the Estonians need to do their job. And they have this large hangar. And so then they put in a whole bunch of benches and folding chairs and whatever else they could manage. It's a war zone. It's not really exactly an auditorium. So they had to sort of do a makeshift stage.
You've got an audience full of people who are risking death every day. Is there a sort of certain gallows humour that develops amongst the troops?
Yes, I suppose. Although everybody's armed. So, you know, if you're not funny, then you think to yourself, this could be a short show.
You've now been back for a couple of weeks.
I've been back.
You've been very elusive. We wanted to get hold of you before, but you've had a couple of weeks to readjust now.
I've had a couple of weeks to readjust. I tell you, it was really one of the most amazing experiences of my life. It truly was. You know, when you sit in a newspaper as a normal person and you sit there and you read a story that, IED goes off in Afghanistan, 2 killed, 6 injured, and it's you see that story almost every day or every other day, unfortunately. It's somehow not real. You don't really have a tangible connection to it. But the Estonian camp was right across the street from where the medevac helicopters landed. And late at night, you're sitting there chatting around the table. And then suddenly you can hear. And then suddenly, and they fly right over the camp, literally maybe 30 meters above you, 25 meters above you, and they land across the street and you can see them. And then you can see the ambulance pull up and you can see them move a stretcher from the helicopter to the ambulance. And you know that that may very well have been somebody who was in the audience, and that may have been somebody that you stood next to in the dining facility. And that's when it all became real.
Because it humanized it for you.
It did humanize it for me. And I think I really believe that every single politician in the world, if they're going to send somebody off to war, then they need to go see it for themselves. You can't sit in an office or sit in parliament or sit someplace. And yes, you know, they get taken on these little tours. and stuff. But they don't sit there at night and listen to the medevac helicopters come in. You know, sure, they'll go to the hospital and shake hands back, you know, in England or back in America. But they should sit there at night and eat, have dinner with the kids, and then listen to those medevac helicopters come in. And then I think it really, really makes you think twice about sending people in harm's way.
Would you go back?
In a heartbeat.
Well, Andy, it's been a real pleasure having you in the studio. Andy Valva, fresh or almost fresh back from Afghanistan. Thank you very much for coming in and entertaining us on WorldLink.
Kate, Emma, thank you so much.
One, 20.